Welcome to another episode of At the Table with Patrick Lencioni, where everything we talk about is related to organizational health and the world of work. So I'm Pat Lencioni, your host, and we have two guest hosts today. Cody's out with his wife. They just had their baby. God bless them. Tracy had a little accident. She's okay, but she's going to the doctor, making sure she's okay. So we're praying for her as well. But I've got Bo Johnson here. How you doing, Bo?
Oh, I'm fantastic, Pat. Good to see you.
So great to have you. And we're excited about this. Karen, how are you doing?
Excellent.
Great. This is going to be fun. Bo, what's our topic today?
Today, we're talking about organizational health insurance.
That's right.
How about that?
Org health insurance.
What does that mean, Pat?
You know, if I were going to give it a boring title, I would have said that organizational health equals resiliency. And I was thinking about this morning because, you know, people are talking about, are we in a recession? Is there one coming next year? What's going on? Everybody gets all freaking out about that. And I understand, but really what we should be doing is saying, what should we be doing right now? So that when it happens, if it happens, how bad it happens, we are in the best possible position. And I realized the real definition, or one of the best ways to look at organizational health, which is what we're all about, is to think about it, is a healthy organization is a resilient one. When the inevitable storm hits, and we know that what's gone on in Florida, and God bless those people, but every organization, whether you're a school, a church, a corporation, a department within a corporation, a small business, every organization has things happen. And we should be asking ourselves, how can we best prepare for when that happens? What's the insurance we need? And that is organizational health. And that's what we want to talk about today. This is a great time to be making your organization even healthier.
So what does that mean? When you say making an organization healthier, does that mean they have lots of savings that they're trimming down to get ready for a financial difficult time? Like what does that mean to be a healthy organization?
Right. And it's so good I was giving a talk yesterday to an organization and the CEO said, this is practical. You know, it's not just this theory, like, let's get healthy. It's like, there are four things you need to do. And on a tactical, intellectual, financial level, yeah, maybe having money in the bank is a good way to do that. In our families, we need to do that, in our businesses. But this is different. What we're saying is be as intent as ever on eliminating the kind of things that will exacerbate a problem. And so there's four things that healthy organizations do. And this right now, as we prepare for a recession, maybe it's already started, maybe it's coming soon. Here's the four things we should be doing right now. And that is make sure that your leadership team, you know, again, and this could be the CEO and his or her leadership team of a big company. It could be a principal and his or her direct reports. Make sure that you are as cohesive as possible. Identify any possible likelihood of politics and infighting and lack of trust or hesitancy around conflict. This would be the time to go, you know, clean out the cartilage in your knee. Because when the stuff hits the fan, all of those things that haven't been addressed are going to get worse. So this is the time. It's kind of like if you knew you were going to get in an accident, you should probably go work out a lot, take your vitamins, eat well. Mm-hmm. Because if you're a healthy body, when that accident occurs, you're going to respond better to that and withstand that because you were healthy. And yet a person who's really unhealthy and something happens to them, they're much more likely to feel it in a worse way.
So Pat, you said there were four things. What are those four things?
Okay. So the first one is make sure that your leadership team is cohesive. You know, go through that, make sure that they trust each other. They're vulnerable, that they argue well. Like say, hey, you guys, let's go do an audit and make sure we're good at this. And, you know, we have an assessment that people take around the five dysfunctions of a team where they can say, oh, wow, we have some susceptibility here. So that's the first one. The second one is this is a great time to make sure we are completely aligned around the answers to those six critical questions. Because people say, well, what does it mean to be aligned? And what does it mean to be clear? Well, there's actually six really simple, ridiculously simple questions that you have to answer. And it's less important that you have the right answer than that everybody is on the same page. Mm-hmm. Now, we all think it's like, oh, let's figure out the right strategy. Maybe the recession's coming. What should we do about finance and marketing and all that? Okay, you're going to do that. But how about we make sure that we're just not rowing in different directions? You know, and so those questions are really simple. They're, why do we exist? Do we remember that? How do we behave? What are our two or three core values? What business are we in? Are we really sure we're in the right business and we're focused on that and eliminating any extraneous things? Because extraneous things, dangling participles, if you will, is a bad thing to have going on when you're getting ready to weather a difficult time. You know, the other one is, how will we succeed? What's our strategic anchors? What's most important right now? Do we have a clear rallying cry? And the last one is, and now who does what? This is a really important time before everything hits to make sure you're clear.
I wrote down in my notes here as you were talking this line, Pat, that you said, we want to eliminate the things that will exacerbate a problem.
Right.
And I'm thinking about some research from Jim Collins, actually. I think he talked about this in Great by Choice, that the chances that any one thing would happen are pretty small. So we don't, but the chances that something is going to happen is really big. Right. So we don't know what's going to come. So it's actually kind of trite to say, oh, how are you going to prepare for the next recession or prepare for quiet quitting or prepare for the next disaster? You don't know what's coming, but organizational health gives you some insurance or flexibility or resilience to be able to be ready no matter what the thing that is coming. So I'm curious. I wanted you to say, oh, okay. So say more about what exacerbates problems. In the negative side, what are the kinds of things that exacerbate problems in an organization?
And boy, I'll do that. I just realized I've only gone through two of the four. So the other two are coming. The other two are coming.
Great. Sorry. Getting ahead of ourselves.
What should you do? And they were like, did he go over all four yet? No, I haven't yet. I will. So the first one is
just really excited.
I am. Build a cohesive leader. Make sure your leadership team is cohesive. Go back and figure that out. Make sure that you're clear. What kind of things, and they usually fall in those first two areas, exacerbate problems, lack of trust. Because when stuff gets hard, people turn on each other or rumors start to spread in the organization or people start reverting to their silos.
Hmm.
You know, confusion and when people disagree, like, oh, I'm in sales, you're in marketing, we don't really agree on what the right thing to do is. That's bad. But when bad things start to happen in the environment, those little disagreements that we never resolved that look like little gaps of light in between us become these blinding, debilitating light in the eyes of everybody in the organization. So misalignment and confusion and even subtle politics or lack of trust, when those exist, it's kind of like, gosh, it's like so many things like in a marriage. Imagine that, like my wife and I, let's say we're not really aligned on some things or we've been struggling, but we haven't dealt with it. And like, we're getting by, we're busy, but you know, well, if something big and difficult happens to our family, that lack of alignment and unity is going to become a huge problem. Mm-hmm. But if she and I are really aligned and we're constantly working on it and we're making sure we're really close, when the life storms come, it's going to be that much easier to weather those. And so don't wait for the bad thing to happen before you do that. It's much harder in the midst of the difficulty to do those things because there's so much pressure and so much weight going on. So let's go back and answer those first two. Okay, the first question that Karen asked me. So make sure that the leadership team is cohesive. Go out and clear out any cartilage. Make sure that you're fully clear. And maybe it's a good time to like say, hey, you know, we're doing some things that are off strategy or not aligned with what we really mean to do. Get rid of it's a great time to prune. Prune before the wind comes, because otherwise the trees are going to go down. I mean, think about that. Think about you'd trim your trees, right?
Mm-hmm.
The third thing is once you do those things, then you have to reinforce through communication. You got to go out and remind people, hey, everybody, remember, I know that there's worry about something coming. Whatever it is, let's remind ourselves why we exist, how we behave, what business we're in, what's our strategy, what's most important, and what are our jobs and how we work together. This is the time to go over communicate. And then the last thing is put in place just enough structure and no more to reinforce your clarity, the answers to those six questions, even when you're not around. Don't bureaucratize it, but institutionalize it. So how do we hire and how do we let people go and how do we manage performance? How do we have meetings? How do we make decisions? Make sure that's really tight. If you do all those things, you're going to have a healthy, resilient organization.
So I have so many questions about practically what do we do? And I'm thinking about the leaders who are listening, and that might feel a little overwhelming of, oh, I've got to go do all of this work in preparation. Pat, what do you think are leaders' objections to doing this work, to building the leadership team, to getting clarity, to over-communicating and reinforcing that clarity? Why do you think leaders don't do that?
It's a great question. You know what they do? They go, oh, things are going to happen. We should be working harder and grinding on the details more right now. Hmm. The idea of slowing down and stepping back it seems kind of countercultural. It's like, no, we should be more efficient right now.
Huh.
And so they're like, we can't slow down. But what I get that, but it's actually the opposite. This is the time, and I'll make it very, very practical. This is the time to get out of your office with your leadership team. Even though all of your instincts are saying, no, we can't do that. And sit down for 6 hours and go through all this stuff. Hey, are we trusting each other? Are we ready? Are we still having all the right arguments because we trust each other and we're vulnerable? Are we prepared to commit to some difficult decisions and be on the same page even when things aren't clear? Are we going to hold each other accountable for the next 6 months when we see somebody straying from something? Because if we can't do it right now, we're not going to do it when things get harder.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And are we really focused on the collective results of the team? Or is anybody feeling tempted to be thinking about themselves rather than the collective good? Because if we are, we're definitely going to do it soon if things turn bad.
Mm. Dealing with those behavioral challenges, Pat, on teams seems really scary and messy. What would you say to a leader who's afraid to do those things, having conflict, holding their people accountable, all those things that we see on teams time and time again?
Yeah, I would just say that the only thing worse than having to do that is not doing it and then feeling the pain that happens when things get harder. I mean, every team we work with goes into this and says, oh, this is going to be messy and a little bit difficult. And we're like, yep. And afterward, they're like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad we did that. Because now we're prepared and we are going to, and this is why we talk about Southwest Airlines. I know we've talked about them so much because they have gone through some of the most difficult things. Just since we started the Table Group, they went through 9/11 when travel got wrecked. They went through the recession in 2008 and now they're coming out of COVID. So these were horrible times to be an airline. They can still say they have not, they've always turned a profit. They've never done a layoff. And they're in the midst of it right now. And they will tell you their culture, their health is what keeps them resilient. And they never take that for granted.
Mm.
And so that's something that every organization needs to be constantly aware of. It's just like marriage, you know, it's like make your marriage strong because when things get hard, that's what's going to get you through.
Pat, if you were going to start, and let's say that somebody doesn't have 6 hours and they're wanting to just make some progress in this direction to say, okay, yeah, team, maybe you send this podcast to them and you're like, let's huddle up and we have an hour to be able to take a first step. What would the first step be?
First step would probably be, this is not a sales thing. I hate selling anything, but I would probably say, go over the model of these four things. And just say, which of these are you most keeps you up at night more? The cohesiveness of our team, the alignment and clarity around who we are and what we're trying to do, the communication to our employees, or the structure. So just, and I would probably sit down and say to a team, okay, let's take the next hour to evaluate, see if we're all aligned around which of these we're most worried about, so we can at least begin there. But I would say, do the organization, do the assessment of the five dysfunctions. Find out where, because really the cohesiveness of the team precedes everything else. Because if you're not cohesive and you can't trust each other and argue and commit, you can't even answer those six questions or communicate consistently and all that. So I'd say this would be a great time to go take the assessment, the five dysfunctions of a team, and find out which specific thing, because that's the beauty of that. It'll show you like the four or five little questions you've answered that you've all agreed are our biggest problems. So I would say do those two things in an hour and you will probably be well on your way to shoring things up and giving yourself some org health insurance.
It's so simple. And actually that sounds like a 5-minute conversation. to draw those four steps and say, where are we at? And I think what would happen is you give your whole team permission to think through that lens and to be thinking about, okay, are we doing these things regularly? And it's not pass fail, right? We always all have work to do in all four of those. You just would be almost sort of handing the keys or permission to your team to say, this is what we're going to make sure that we're trying to chase over the next few months so that we're ready for whatever is coming next.
Yeah. And I will tell you, Bo, I love that, what you just said. And I love when executives are a little bit reluctant, because if I were to say to them, hey, if you do this, if spending 3 hours talking about this prevents one of you from leaving when things go bad, or prevents losing your best customer because things go bad and you guys are on, you know, what would we have? And people would go, oh yeah, we should take a day to figure this out. So, so I think that when Karen, you guys just said, if they only had an hour, I would probably say, how much time would be worth spending now to ensure that you don't lose a valuable team member? Because your best employees will leave during difficult times. They'll leave first. And usually when I say that to a leader of a team, they'll go, oh gosh, okay, we got to do this. What would it be worth to you to keep your best employees?
So, yeah, so Pat, we oftentimes get this question about what's the ROI to organizational health, like the return on investment for putting in this effort. What would your answer be to that?
Well, you know, the beauty is when like as we're preparing for a difficult time, people are a little bit easier to convince that the ROI is worth it. But what I can say is you can't calculate it. Go to a company that has a fantastic culture that's organizationally healthy and say, so what's that worth to your bottom line? What percentage of your revenue, your profit, or whatever else? And they would say, no, there's no way we can do that. It's everything, you know? And so, you know, it's kind of like this. I think about like a football team. Sports analogies are good just because they have a season and wins and losses, and it's kind of a contained little example. But if it's like, if you said we're going to have a great football, there's going to be injuries this year. Someone on this team is going to get hurt. And we don't know who it is, but it always happens. It could be our quarterback. It could be our left tackle. It could be our best defensive player. We don't know who that is. So rather than trying to game plan around that, we are going to make sure that we are resilient as a team. We're going to make sure that the coaches are getting along well, that the team is supportive of one another, that we're clear about what our strengths and weaknesses are. Everybody knows what they're doing. We're going to over-communicate that. And so in the middle of a game, when one of the players goes down, we all pull together rather than go into the locker room and go, oh, we're screwed. You know? So we're going to have insurance against something going wrong, but we can never anticipate exactly what it is. Let's just make sure there's no politics. Let's make sure there's no confusion. Let's make sure that everybody knows who's next up if something happens.
So I want to click into the clarity. So the second step, answering those six questions. And I don't know if I'm alone here, but I know that as leaders, sometimes the reason we don't want to clarify is that clarifying excludes. Because if we say this is the reason we exist, it does clarify for everybody. But somebody who thought we existed for a different reason all of a sudden might not feel like they belong. Or if we say this is how we behave, it then does that make sense?
It clarifies it.
So what do you say to that?
Well, I hadn't thought of this before, but what I said earlier about trimming the tree before the winds come, it's like if you reinforce that and say, hey, this is why we exist and this is how we behave. Those are the first two. Jim Collins would call that, you know, that's your core that never changes. That's your core identity. And there's going to be people that go, gosh, we haven't talked about this in a while. They might actually say, I don't really find that interesting, or I don't like those. Or you might more than likely, the executive team is going to get together and go, oh, wow, yeah, those are our core behaviors. I have a couple people in my department who I don't think fit that. But when things were going well, we could kind of tolerate that and survive that. But when things get bad, having them around is only going to exacerbate this. You might have to go sit down with those people and say, hey, we need you to commit to these values. And we've been seeing some things that make us wonder. Or maybe it's time for you to find someplace else that you're more aligned with. You know, and even the reason for existing, why do we exist? Some people are going to be like, yeah, I'm kind of indifferent to that purpose. Well, when things get bad, it's that conviction that purpose matters is what keeps people in the game. And people that are kind of indifferent are the ones that are going to cause problems.
Which of those questions do you think teams are most likely to skip? Which is the one they're most likely to overlook or to not see as super valuable for them to answer?
Yeah, I think that because we're more interested in being smart than healthy, I think values are the one.
Yeah.
Because it's like values, that's a long-term thing. What does that matter? We're about to see our margins go down or costs are going up. Inflation is happening. What are we going to do? And it's so funny. You'd want to go solve the tactical things. And the further along you get in those six questions, questions five and six get more tactical. But it's like, no. Go upstream and go say, what's really going to help us when the costs go up or when inflation hits or customers are pushing on our pricing, it's really going to be, is everybody in the organization aligned around why this is so important and how we behave? Because that's how we're going to get more. Our productivity will go up if we're a team that's completely comprised against people that get the values.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were with a team recently and we had presented these six questions and then we asked the leader of the team, hey, which one do you want to work through? And she said, oh, I want to work on 4 and 5. How will we succeed and what's most important right now?
I said, okay, hey, you know something about, I like working on those too. I'm going to tell you, when I work with teams, it's like, those are really fun.
They are. Oh, they're really fun. And then she said, yeah, I think we know number 2 already. We're pretty good. I just kind of felt in my gut that that wasn't totally true. So I looked at one of the new people on the team and I said, hey, do you know what verbs you're supposed to be doing? Like, do you know what it means to be a good team member around here? He said, no, I have no idea. And I don't even know if I should stay here.
Oh,
because,
wow.
Because he was so talented and so smart, but didn't know, like, who am I supposed to be here? What are the...
I want to hear, after this is over, I want to hear that story. That sounds fascinating.
Yeah, it was super interesting because I think the people who'd been there for a long time had intuited this idea of what that means. But actually, a lot of it was by accident and it wasn't who they wanted to be. And it led to this great conversation that then he actually can show up and know how he's supposed to be. I don't know. I keep saying the same thing. How he's supposed to be behaving. What are the verbs he should be chasing down? The things that distinguish them as an organization.
Yeah. Hmm. That's, you know, gosh, I guess, imagine, and again, we don't want to be cavalier at all about like what's going on in Florida right now. And please contribute, pray for those people, help in any way you can. But I think if somebody said to me, Pat, you would live in it, like if I had a house in the forest and we live in California, there's fire season. And they said, there's a decent chance, which might be 5%, but that's high for what it is, that there's going to be a fire in this area and you're going to have to evacuate quickly. And your house might be threatened. I would go trim all my hedges away from my house. I would clean out my garage. I would figure out which of my valuables was most important. I'd probably try to find a fireproof safe and I'd get ready. And even if that fire never happened, my life would be better as a result of that. But God forbid that happens, you're that much more likely to survive it, to get out on time, and maybe even your house not to burn down because you've got the brush away from your house and all that other kind of stuff. So rather than just angst about the potential for a fire, do all the things. And if that fire never comes, you are so much better off.
Mm-hmm.
This Agreed. Is the best time. You know, we had that podcast that said, what's the best time to plant a tree? It's like 10 years ago or yesterday or today. And it's like, what's the best time to prepare for the fire or the natural disaster or the recession? Well, it would have been nice to know 5 years ago, but let's do it now.
Yeah.
What we're proposing is for people to really take control over the things that we have control of internally, right? Preparing for the tide to go out. But leaders also have so many external factors that they're dealing with on a daily basis. And so how do I balance all of that with the external versus, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. There's so many distractions and temptations to try to fix things.
Right.
And I know, like, I want to, we're really tempted to kind of control things that we don't have control over.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Or to try to, and that prevents us from doing what we can, you know? So imagine if I lived in a fire zone, I could drive around and check all the power stations to make sure that there was nothing wrong. I could call the power company and ask them what they've done. And those are things that are pretty far outside of my circle of influence. Stephen Covey talks about your circle. Mm-hmm. But what's in my circle of influence is what I do around my property.
Mm-hmm.
And And gosh, it's easy to watch the news and wring your hands over the potential for a recession. And I hope people think about that when they vote and when they advocate for things and when they, you know, because we want to do all we can to make our economy strong. But most of that is outside of our circle of influence. So let's get back into our circle of influence. And the funny thing is, when we work within our circle of influence, it actually grows. Stephen Covey said that, you know, it actually grows. And then we might start to have even more influence broader.
I want to go back to something you had mentioned. I think sometimes this sounds sort of soft or passive, or that sounds nice. Yeah, it'd be nice for this to be a fun place to work. But literally in 2001, Southwest Airlines posted a profit in the fourth quarter of that year. Chick-fil-A, when COVID hit, they had their record-setting month in May of that year. Like, this is not just a nice to have. This allows you to continue to employ people, to return value to your shareholders, and to be a place where people feel stability of, oh, this company is still going to exist. And I'm thinking about how important it is when the you-know-what hits the fan, that you as a leader are able to get the truth. And when you're in leadership, it's very, very hard to get the truth. People want to bring positive reports. They want to say everything's going to be fine. But if you've done that work as a leader to create a team where trust is built and people can have great conflict and where there's a permission to be able to say, hey, I need some help in my area, you'll be able to get the truth faster, which means you'll be able to solve problems more quickly. Because Southwest Airlines was having the same problems everybody else was in 2001. But Pat, my guess is they knew about the problems quicker.
Yes, they weren't smarter. They didn't understand the business better. They created an environment where the right issues got surfaced faster and people rallied around fixing them. Because people weren't afraid about protecting or pretending they didn't do anything wrong. It was like, well, no, we don't care. Let's solve the problem. So that's a great way, Bo, to say this. Think about this too, though. A healthy organization, employees are, and if this is soft, then fine, give me soft. Employees are more committed. They're more engaged. They know what's going on. They feel part of things. There's more trust, all those other things from the top down. So when something bad happens, they pitch in more. And in this world of I saw another darn thing about quiet quitting, because we did a podcast called Enough About Quiet Quitting. And there was another one, Act Your Wage. That's a new thing. Act Your Wage. So if they don't pay you enough, and this was from somebody making $13 an hour, and they said, I'm just not going to do anything they asked me beyond this. That happens in dysfunctional organizations. But there's organizations where volunteers will go above and beyond, and they're getting paid nothing. And so if you have a healthy organization, and that is employee engagement, that is commitment, that is I belong here, my values matter, people are going to go above and beyond. And that is the kind of uncalculable, measurable thing that is the difference between a company getting trashed in the middle of difficult things or maybe going out of business or being resilient. Because one of the things we have to remember is that after it's over, how quickly are we going to come back from it? The resilient companies are like ready to go.
And they can pivot faster too.
Absolutely. But not because they're intellectually smarter. It's because they're behaviorally healthier and they recover faster. That's what we're doing right now. We're exhorting people. This is the best time to make your organization healthy, your team more cohesive, that team more clear and aligned around those six questions. Communicate more to your employees. Shore up those basic things around hiring and firing and managing and promoting and training. Once something hits, when that wave hits the ship, you're not going to teeter. I've used enough analogies. I think I'm the analogy guy.
By the way, you wrote a book about this. It's called The Advantage.
Yes.
In case people are curious.
Yeah. That there's a place to go to hear about this. Lots of stories, lots of things. Okay. We should go. Cause I need to go ask Bo this question about this client he worked with. Cause this sounds fascinating and we couldn't do it on the air right now. Cause it's probably a little bit confidential, but I can't wait to hear about it. All right. Karen, Bo, thanks for filling in. God bless you, Cody and Tracy. We'll look forward to talking to you next time. And thank you all for listening. We really appreciate our audience. And I love when I hear back from you because there's so many good insights we get from our audience. So thanks a lot. We'll talk to you next time on At the Table. God bless.